Hey there, this is New York Times bestselling author and ridiculously happy wife, Laura Doyle. Buckle up, Aubrey's about to take you on another great episode of The Road to Rediscovery. Sit back and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can get this show anywhere you listen to your podcasts, anywhere around the world, globally, even platforms you've never even heard of. Yes, we are that widespread. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. If you happen to listen on Spotify, who now allows rates and reviews of podcasts, we invite you to leave one there as well. And if you're not on either of those and listen to some other platform, we still want your feedback. Just shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we're going to give you a shout out in a future episode and thank you for your question. And you might even get a special gift. All right. Fantastic. Well, with that said, my special guest is a naturopathic physician with her own thriving private practice in Portland, Oregon. She specializes in chronic fatigue, from uncovering the root causes to practical tips for overcoming it and a lot more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Dr. Jenny Tufinkian to the show. Dr. Jenny, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Aubrey. I'm really excited for our conversation today.
Oh, likewise. We are thrilled to have you, and we are thrilled to just dive into some incredible insights I have no doubt you have to share with the listeners. So first off, and I know you may have been asked this many times, but I just want to know, early on, what got you interested in specializing in chronic fatigue?
Chronic fatigue really chose me. I ended up my second year of medical school deciding it was time to have another child. I had decided to become a physician when I was 6 months pregnant with my first kid. Mm. I was a single mom back then, ended up marrying his dad when he was two, and a whole other story. And really thought it was time, and loved medical school. Ended up having a hard time having a full pregnancy. I had a couple of miscarriages, and the second miscarriage ended at 17 weeks. Oh, I hemorrhaged, was passed out, had to be rushed to the hospital, and would have been another statistic of somebody, of a woman dying in childbirth if it wasn't for the modern medical system. Right. I was never so glad to be in a room with white lights and surgery and all that kind of stuff to save me. It was, you know, such a blessing to be able to be there, really. That experience really was a huge shock to my physical body and my emotional body. When you're pregnant, you're full of hormones. And when you suddenly are not pregnant, it's easy to go into a thing called postpartum depression. Right. Those happen with miscarriages as well. Also, when you have an extreme amount of blood loss in combination with being pregnant, there's a thing called Sheehan syndrome, which can really throw off your thyroid gland. Mm-hmm. These things, along with just the immense grief I felt, I had lost, this is my second miscarriage of the year, and I had also lost five other people who were very close to me that year as well. Yeah. I was in medical school with a child. There wasn't a lot of time for me to process these things. I didn't give myself the space to process this and take the time out that I likely needed. Mm-hmm. And you talk about stress and going as a professional, and you know, those of us that are professionals, parents, are in, you know, high level academic situations, you just go, you just keep going. And although I was happy, it was a lot of stress on my body. And I really think all of those things just threw me into this incredible space that I call a dark night of the soul. I really see that we have a physical body, a mental, emotional, and an energetic body. Mm-hmm. And we can have dis-ease on any one of those levels, and it can impact the other ones. When when you have experienced, I know some of you listening have experienced a time when you were just down, 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 like really down. And my experience is that when we are really down, like I was in this situation, it's because all three of those levels were just out. Usually it's just one or two when you can kind of support yourself. This, I was in bed and if I had high energy, my head was on a pillow. If I was exhausted, my head was flat. I had to be walked to the bathroom. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't handle the energy of other people in the room. It made me have to face a lot of things about myself. And it really took me to a much deeper place, which is why I call it the dark night of the soul, because my soul was able to grow through this experience. And I actually learned a lot in the process. I got out of this space of feeling suicidal and severe anxiety and all of this after a few months with the right kinds of help and support. And I say what I moved from the bed to the couch. I was no longer depressed. I didn't have the anxiety, but I was tired. I was really tired.
Right.
And I had to take a whole other year off of medical school. And that's the part that was really the chronic fatigue, what we now call myalgic encephalitis. That's when that really kicked in. And I completely rejected the label. I was like, no, I don't have the yuppie flu. That's what they called it in the 90s.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. That's what I had. And so it was really, it chose me. I ended up needing to figure out how to get out of it and understanding it the best I could.
I got you. Wow. So, I mean, traumatic experience after another from the miscarriages to losing five loved ones and a lot of pressures, right? Going on personally, right? And that compounds itself just as you mentioned there. And it sounds as if you were completely depleted in so many levels, on so many levels, right?
I was
needing assistance carrying, you know, from the bedroom to the bathroom and the living room and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible, absolutely incredible. So it appears that one could have this chronic fatigue and the scientific name you gave it, you mentioned
it can be abbreviated ME, myalgic encephalitis.
Yes. Encephalitis. Okay. Yeah. ME or chronic fatigue. One could have it and not know. Is that possible?
It is. Yeah. I actually see that a lot. I think it's very common. It's extremely underdiagnosed because we don't have a test to measure if somebody has it or not.
Yeah.
And because the symptoms are kind of a diagnosis of exclusion, a doctor has to go through and say, do you have anemia? Do you have cancer? Do you have this? Do you have that? Before we get to this diagnosis.
Sure.
It's often missed. And I think also because the main symptom is you're tired. A lot of people walk around tired and they just think, oh, they blame themselves. Like, oh, if I just made it to the gym, or if I just stopped eating pizza, or if I just went to bed, or if I just did this or that, then I wouldn't be so tired. So it's my fault. And they don't think about it as being actually something where their body is in severe dysregulation and you need help.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Just as you were mentioning that, Dr. Jenny, I had a thought of, for myself, this was, oh my goodness, this was December of 2020. Mm-hmm. And for ever since the end of October to the end of December, I was just completely winded. I could barely, walk from one corner of our street block to the other. Mm-hmm. And even just putting on my clothes, I would just get so winded, and it would take me a long time to recover my breath. And I thought, oh, I'm just out of shape. I felt a little tired, not so tired, but then, you know, just really winded. And then I had to get past that guilt after I found out that I had bilateral pulmonary embolisms and the blood clots were on all over my both sides
of my,
my lungs. Right.
Wow.
And the emergency room said, we don't even know how you hopped in your truck and drove here and walked across the parking lot. We got to get you to the hospital. And so, you know, I mean, talk about not knowing you have something, and something that's highly irregular with your body, right?
Yeah, I just really hope everybody who's listening is really hearing this. It's so easy to dismiss. We're so good at survival. We're so wired for it. And I think the more that we have taken on in terms of responsibility in the world as parents or professionals, we're just kind of more and more used to being like, oh, I can cope. And those of us that are really good at holding a lot for other people, we tend to be the ones that are most likely to kind of dismiss our symptoms or put our needs, you know, I'll deal with that later. That's a perfect example. I am so glad you went to the hospital.
Oh, me too. And it was my wife, right? I mean, she said, hey, let's ride our bikes, you know, here in North Texas in December. We can. And so we just went to the first corner, and usually, you know, I'm right along with her or I'm ahead of her. She was way ahead of me and waited for me. And she said, something's not right, you know?
Yeah.
And the rest is history from there, of course. But, you know, that kind of reminds me of this next question I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of the associations with ME, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think typically a lot of people try to associate chronic fatigue with lifestyle, right? You are that single parent who's going to night school and you have two jobs and that's your lifestyle. And that, of course, you know, you don't get as much sleep as you should. And so, you know, that brings it on, or it could be another type of lifestyle. But, you know, as typical as that may sound, are there other associations with chronic fatigue that's not necessarily a type of way you're living, I guess.
So it sounds like what you're asking me is, what are some of the things that we think bring it on and make somebody more susceptible, one person more susceptible than another person? Is that what you're asking? Is that what you're wondering?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that the list is pretty long, and I don't think there's 100% scientific agreement as to what can bring it on. I can tell you what, from reading hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of research papers at this point, and studying this deeply for a couple decades and watching as the new literature comes, and then from all of the people that I have worked with and myself, I would say there are a number of, what I really look at are the health foundations that we all have to have in good shape. They literally are foundations of our health. Yeah. Things like digestion and detoxification, your daily rhythm and your sleep, your movement and your breath, your mindset and your spirit. And the fifth one that I added in after the pandemic, which is connection to yourself, to community, to your higher self, to whatever, you know, whatever else it is that you find energetically valuable for you. Those things are so central to being a healthy human being, a healthy body, that having those foundations undermined is literally like having a building without a strong foundation or one that's rotting. It's very hard for you to withstand challenges. It's hard for you to be resilient. It's hard for you to do well. And so when I look at the times that I've been really ill, I can point to those health foundations as being dysregulated. And when my patients or clients come in and we're talking, that's one of the first things that I'm asking about, because it helps us understand why it is that you got to where you are here, why you got this myalgic encephalitis or long COVID, and what it is that you need to do to get out of it. So that's one thing, are those health foundations, super important. And then we look at the root causes, and there are five really key root causes that can be setups for people to get this pattern of myalgic encephalitis or long COVID. Mm-hmm. And those are really key in terms of why it is that you get this condition. I'll go ahead and go through those, and then you can tell me if this is answering your question, because if it's not, I totally want to answer your question.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So the five root causes, one of them is what I call the gateway root cause, where we're looking at this hormonal imbalance. And I call this the gateway because the hormone imbalance has to do with your stress response glands, your adrenal glands, your thyroid gland, and then your ovary or testes, if you're male or female. And this is a triangle that has to work together. And when it gets dysregulated, it throws the whole body out of balance. And this triangle, if one is out of balance, the other ones will kind of get out of whack as well. Trying to recenter the body, they tend to kind of get uncentered. And I call it a gateway root cause because this is very common for people who are under a lot of stress. So like you said, you're working two jobs, you're in school, you've got kids. That's stress. It's very hard to get adequate sleep. It's going to throw off your circadian rhythm. It's going to create a situation where you have to have high cortisol levels and you're going to throw off that whole stress response system. And that's going to become a setup for your body to become more vulnerable to some of the other root causes, such as infections. You can have a new infection, which is why the pandemic has led to this thing called long COVID, because infections are one of the root causes of this cyst of myalgic encephalitis. Or you can have a reactivation of an old infection. You can have something that's been in your body, but's been in remission, like Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus. There are lots of viruses that we carry lots and lots of viruses in us. We don't even have names for all of them, but they can become reactivated when you're under stress. We have people that are never well since they had a motor vehicle accident, or never well since the divorce, or never well since they had that traumatic pregnancy or birth. These things can become so stressful in the body that the immune system gets challenged and these viruses reactivate. That's the second root cause. The next one is looking at mitochondrial function. And the mitochondrial do many things in our body, but their main job is to create energy for us to function. The mitochondria are so essential that if they all disappeared in your body, you could live 3 seconds. They are so essential to life. We have to live with them. And those cartoons, when they throw out poison and everybody dies instantly, that's poison that is killing the mitochondria. Things like cyanide wipe out the mitochondria very quickly. And so you really want to have your mitochondria functioning well. And a lot of people who have myalgic encephalitis or long COVID have severe problems with the mitochondria. Now, in terms of what is the cause of this, the mitochondria get damaged by lots of different things, lifestyle, toxic exposures, the viruses can impact them, stress can impact them, all these things can impact the mitochondria. And this is just, I expect that at some point we may find that there's some sort of autoimmune type of thing happening inside the mitochondria with people who have myalgic encephalitis and long COVID. And it may be that some of us are more genetically likely to get that. And that may just be a subgroup of people who have this condition. So often we'll see patterns of family members who have myalgic encephalitis or more tending towards that pattern. You know, my aunt had it, my mom had it, my brother had it, that kind of thing. And so that kind of makes you think, is there a genetic component here? Now, genes can be turned on or turned off. So don't just a lot, you know, by lifestyle. So that's the third one. The fourth one is looking at toxic exposures. And this is your heavy metals, breathing in lead from fumes. If you were born before 1979, mercury, you know, mercury fillings in your mouth, or mercury that's being pumped out by a coal plant. All of these things, glyphosates from pesticides, other kinds of herbicides, pesticides, plastics. I mean, there's so many toxins, and these toxins, our body doesn't really know how to get rid of them. You know, plastic is a relatively new thing in our world. My grandma didn't grow up with plastics in her world. They hadn't invented them yet. Right. Our bodies don't know how to get rid of this stuff. And it can be very damaging to our cells and can lead to not having optimal energy. And once we get these toxins out, our cells can act more normally and our energy can increase. And then the fifth root cause is looking at the limbic emotional brain. Mm-hmm. And this is where we can look at, has there been trauma in your past that has piled up? It can be inherited trauma. We know that we inherit trauma from previous generations and that can stack up. We have our unconscious mind is most of our mind. If you think of a pie, you think of 5% of that pie, that's conscious thought. The rest is unconscious. And that unconscious holds a lot of that trauma in there and can begin to affect how it is that our whole physiology works. And this connects with our whole body through this nerve called the vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these things can become a bit of a vicious cycle. Whereas if your digestion is off, you have a couple health foundations. If your digestion is off, you'll get gas and bloating, you have diarrhea, you're eating foods you're allergic to or sensitive to. It can send that vagus nerve can send a message up to your brain, to your subconscious brain, saying, we're not really doing that great down here. And then you stack that on to some trauma, some toxic exposure, a stress, and you start to get these compounding things that add up and can tip your body over into a state of dysregulation. And that vagus nerve begins to send a message down to the body saying, you know what? I don't think you're very safe right now. I think it'd be a lot better if you could just go hide in your cave. And it literally sends a signal that slows down your metabolism and sends out hyperactive senses of pain and fatigue so that you just go hide in your cave so that you can stay safe. So these are how all these things can kind of interact.
I see. So endless variables and limitless infinite combination of variables, right, is what I'm hearing. I'm also hearing that because of all these variables, this goes beyond just, oh, you're not getting enough sleep. It goes totally way beyond that. And what I also kind of think when you mentioned this, Dr. Jenny, is I've always wondered for some reason when it came to COVID, and you brought up COVID and long, you know, long haulers and things like that. I've always wondered why were some more impacted with chronic fatigue after getting over COVID than others?
Yeah.
Right. And the only thing I could think of from the highest level is because our holistic makeup is all different. When you consider all the factors that you just mentioned for your holistic makeup that you explore before making a diagnosis like that, any given person can have any combination of these things.
Yeah. I do think it's true. I think that, and that's, there's a unique path for everyone to get into this long haulers pattern.
Yeah.
And it's not the same for everyone, which is part of the thing that makes it really hard for a conventional medical practice to treat it, because they're really good at stuff when it's kind of the same and you can just repeat and do the same thing. It's challenging when it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
And for some people, their setup could have been because, like for me, I got reactivated. I got long COVID when I got COVID, and my total setup was because my gastrointestinal system was a mess when I got COVID. Yeah. I had a low grade infection that I was waiting to treat until I finished travel, you know, sort of like quote unquote the end of the pandemic. And I was like, oh, great, I finally get to leave. You know, I wasn't even traveling.
Yeah.
And I was in the Dominican Republic teaching this group of executive women, and I ended up getting food poisoning while I was there. I was in my hotel room with diarrhea and a fever for a couple of days while I was in the hotel room with obviously my whole microbiome completely shredded. I got exposed to COVID. And and we know that that makes you much more likely to get long COVID because your immune system is so part of your gut that not having that there is huge. And and we're really seeing that as being a very close correlation for people getting long COVID. Yeah. And then the second thing is I was under immense amount of stress during the pandemic. And I know so many people were, which was another reason why I think long COVID has really hit big time, is because many of us went through huge griefs or financial stress or just the stress of isolation. I mean, there's so many reasons for us to experience that real core, deep, am I okay kind of stress, you know, that stuff that really takes you down.
Yeah.
But it is different for different people for sure.
Yeah. Without a doubt. And, with COVID happening, they're starting in 2020, kind of bringing us up to current date and time. In contrast to that, you know, I want to know your thoughts on whether or not there's been a change or an evolution in the awareness and the attention that ME should have by society, by the medical professionals, and by just people in general, say from 30, 40, 45 years ago, where the mindset would be, I guess, simply put, you're not getting enough sleep, or you need to exercise, or you need to lose weight, or you need to, you and that girlfriend, you're just not working out, you know, she's bringing on stress, or he's bringing on stress, you know, and it's all these outward things that I guess at the time people were looking for as far as what is the cause or the root cause, or maybe I just get more sleep. It seems to me as if it was the awareness or the attention. People weren't as cognizant of it 30, 40, 45 years ago as they are today. But that's just from me on the outside looking in. I would love to hear your thoughts based on your experience with this over the years, if society has become more mindful of this condition.
I have to say thank you for asking that question. As somebody who has experienced this and has somebody who has been in conversation with thousands of people who have experienced this condition and felt ghosted and ignored and misunderstood for most of their lives, I so appreciate you asking this question. And the answer is yes, with a capital Y, E, and S. Yes, yes, yes. And it has been, I'd say, the blessing of this second pandemic of the long COVID. I'm sorry for it. And the blessing has been that we have gotten attention, because you started having physicians who didn't understand it and literally would send their patients down to the psych ward. No joke. I mean, this was the classic move was, the classic comments were, your labs are all normal. You look great.
Yeah.
Why don't you go down to psych and get an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety med? Or since it happens to land in a lot of women's bodies, we get the, oh, honey, it's because you have kids or because you're old and you're 35. You know, I mean, it was like
early gaslighting,
total gaslighting, or, you know, some other version of she's being hysterical. She's making this up. I mean, seriously.
Wow.
I had one doctor who was honest and told the patient, I'm sorry, I don't have any answers for you. You need to get used to it and just drink more coffee. And that was his answer to her. Yeah, that was the MD that she saw, the specialist actually that she saw. Oh my. So this is what people were dealing with. And I would say that there's a massive amount of awareness. And as I started seeing headlines coming out in major newspapers about long COVID and long haulers, I'm like, it's getting attention and this is good. Yeah. And when I went to the NIH, the National Institute of Health Research, they every 4 years they put on a talk where all the researchers that have been working on myalgic encephalitis for the last 4 years present their information. And this last one I went to, one of the doctors there did a really great presentation, and she showed us in this very beautiful graphic these bags of money. And said, this little bag down here is what the research funding has been historically for ME/CFS. Yeah. And now because of long COVID, there was this big, huge funding. And all of a sudden the bag is like this big. It's like so much larger. And that has made a huge difference, because now you can fund research in these large universities. And, you know, it's just how the society works. It's money driven. There hasn't been money put towards this. There haven't been enough people until now who have been impacted by it for it to get enough attention to say, hey, this is making a difference. It's and again, because the symptoms were vague. It was a lot of women who were being impacted. It was ignored by so many doctors, it was very easy to not understand the impact this is having on people's lives. But when you begin to understand what it feels like to be walking around like you're half dead, like you don't have the energy to be fully you, and the impact of that in your ability to parent, if you want to take your kid and be and go play soccer with them and interact and, you know, be there for them to talk about what happened to them in that day.
Yes.
But you're having a hard time standing up and all you can do is lie down on the couch. And so you go, yeah, okay, it's fine. Yeah, you can watch TV. Go ahead.
Right, right.
You know, if you're in your relationships, if you don't have the energy to go out with your partner and to develop and grow this, nurture this relationship, yeah, it's very easy for them to break down. If you can't show up and be your best at work, then you're not able to contribute your genius, you know, to the world. Yeah. And so, like, there's no way you can put money to these things that are lost when people are struggling with this condition.
Oh, no, 100%. And Dr. Jenny, my goodness, I am so, so thrilled and happy to hear that it is getting the just due awareness and attention that it needs, that it deserves, that people need and deserve to have an answer, to find an answer, right? Yeah. And isn't it amazing how the change in behavior can be the catapult for and the springboard for so many different things? A change in behavior, awareness, attention, then wallets start to open. When wallets start to open, then research starts getting done. Research starts getting done. Guess what? Treatments are developed and all of these different things. Again, behavior, that springboard, but someone has to be the voice. There has to be a collective voice that raises awareness. And I have a feeling that is one of the things that you champion that I can't commend you enough for championing this. Now, I want us to talk about, and we'll get to this, drawing that bridge between the emotional side of what people go through with chronic fatigue, drawing that bridge between that and holistic healing methods that can help them overcome the emotional downside. Okay, but before that, I have one more generational question, if you don't mind me me asking.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I wanted to know, it seems like, well, okay, I'm 56, okay? And as I get older, I can't speak for everyone, but as I get older, I seem to have a better appreciation for the elements of time and the elements of energy, okay, as I get older. And I always look for ways to be creative in finding how to preserve both time and energy. So, this question is in part to, from a demographic perspective, you know, young adults and teenagers who may have ME, and how it impacts them versus how it impacts middle-aged people. I'm wondering, you know, do we have a responsibility, or how do we impart this feeling, this wisdom of wanting to preserve to younger people who have way more time and energy than we do, so they can be mindful of the use of their time and the use of their energy and understanding and being mindful and aware of, you know, I may have a health condition if I don't feel myself, you know, and not just going forward.
It's a good question. So in terms of being able to convince people who are in their 20s and 30s who are feeling pretty healthy that they should pay attention to their health and not, you know, be digging out those foundations, I think that's hard. You know, I sure had a hard time listening to people and I dug out my foundations over and over again in terms of the choices I made both for fun and for my dreams of being a physician and being a mom and all of that. And yet it's still a drum I beat every chance I get to talk to people and explain to them that, you know, I talk to women who are going through perimenopause and menopause. And I know that because I'm included in this pile of people, if I had paid more attention to my daily rhythm, to my sleep, to my stress management, to what I'm saying to myself consciously and unconsciously, as a 20-year-old and a 30-year-old, it would have made my perimenopause so much easier.
Oh, sure.
Because that adrenal gland just gets so stressed out in the 20s and 30s.
Yes.
And then the 40s and 50s when it starts to have taking over more, because you're not meant to be having kids at that age, it just doesn't have the juice and it makes that ride so much bumpier. So, and that being one of the root causes is that system being out, you know, this is something that I try to impart on people in their 20s and their 30s, but sometimes I feel like it's just going like this.
Right. Yeah.
But to your question, for those who are struggling and know that there's something, that kind of that inkling that something's not right,
yeah.
They see their friends, their college student friends, or their, you know, friends at work, just being able to pull, you know, stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and be okay the next day, or
right.
Be able to work all day and go out at night and they're fine. And you find yourself canceling out of social events. You're doing what I call energy budgeting,
yeah.
Either consciously or unconsciously, where it's like, well, if I go to the party tonight, then I'm going to be trashed for the next couple of days. And I've got this thing I got to do tomorrow. So I'm just going to go home and go to bed and sit with my cat on the couch. You know, if
yeah.
You find yourself making these choices, then this really is a call for you to get a good workup to see what's going on. And the thing I want to tell everyone who's listening is, you know your body better than any physician.
Right.
So if you go in somewhere and you know something is not right and you get told, oh my gosh, your lab values are so good. Oh, you have low blood pressure. Congratulations. You look so good. I wish I looked as good as you. If you get those kind of lines and you come out going, yeah, but I feel messed up inside.
Right.
Believe yourself and keep knocking on doors until you find the answers that you need so that you can start addressing your health issues. Because, like, you know, Aubrey, you and I know, like, this is a limited time journey. And the healthier that we are on this journey, the more satisfying it can be. And,
You know,
once you don't, I've been really sick for many years of my life. And I can tell you that when you're sick, the only thing you want is your health. That's the only thing you want. You'd give up right. Everything to have your health, because you know that if you had your health, then you can have the relationships you want. You can have the work that you want. You can have the abundance that you want. All of that happens.
Yes.
It's really your health that's the most essential. So
100%.
Yeah,
100%. And, that's the basis of everything, right? I mean, I can retire at, say, 75 years old. And mm-hmm. if I have not taken care of my body, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years earlier, you know, it's like, how can I enjoy? You can't really enjoy a trip when you're not healthy. You can't really right. enjoy retirement, that last twilight right. chapter, if
right.
you're not healthy. So yeah, that is the basis and the foundation. And so when you have people, let's say, going back to the long haulers and mm-hmm. going back to those who have fatigue, even though they no longer carry this other symptoms of COVID, you know, mm-hmm. Is there some sort of, I don't know, internal guilt or shame that they have for being so tired, so fatigued, not themselves, and really at an impasse of not knowing how to address this, how to cure this, and when it impacts you emotionally, because you feel like you're a shadow of yourself from years ago, then that impacts how you interact with others. It impacts how you perform mm-hmm. in your job. It impacts on you know, habits that you were very strict and regimented on, you may mm-hmm. fall by the wayside. So, you know, what type of healing practices can one do of the mind, the spirit, and the body that can help them overcome this mm-hmm. emotional anguish of the fatigue and hopefully in turn overcome the fatigue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very astute question. So I would say to the first part of that, yes, there's a huge amount of shame and guilt that comes in for a lot of people who have this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Again, saying I'm tired I mean, not to dismiss anyone who has a diagnosis of something that's more known, like I have cancer or I have, you know, I broke my leg or something like that. It's a known thing and people come and bring you lasagna. If you say I have chronic fatigue, they don't bring you lasagna. They don't get it. They don't understand it. If you say, they say, well, what's your symptoms? Well, I'm really tired. Most people go, well, I'm really tired too. And so because there isn't a lot of understanding even still in the culture about how physiologic this condition really is and how devastating it is to your body and to you, it's very easy to feel like people are judging you and to judge yourself. And I think any of us, no matter what the situation, it's very easy to judge ourselves if we're not holding ourselves up to our expectations of how we want to be in terms of parenting, in terms of work. And so, yes, the shame and the guilt is definitely there. And of course, and to your answer of how do you work on this? Well, what is going to get triggered is based on what's in that unconscious mind of yours. If you think about that pie, and that 5% is conscious thought, the rest is subconscious, unconscious. It's everything you've thought and felt and experienced from in utero to present. So what your mom was experiencing when you were pregnant with, when she was pregnant with you, it's again, that generational memory can stuff can be in there. Yeah. And we start layering things into that subconscious mind to interpret meaning. And if we grew up in a family where many of us did, where there were some kinds of trauma, where we didn't feel that we were worthy, where we didn't feel like we got enough love. I mean, this is just, it's endemic. You know, we have not perfected parenthood and we have not perfected a healthy community culture. And so a lot of kids grow up before they're fully formed, just feeling like there's something wrong with them. And if you hold that belief, that unconscious belief that I'm not okay, there's something wrong with me, or I was bad because I stole the brownies and I got caught, you know, it's like the thing was, right? You know,
right.
This tiny little innocent little kid thing. Uh-huh. But in our subconscious minds, like, I'm really bad. Dad was really angry with me. Then it can, if you haven't worked on healing those pieces, this sense of, wow, I'm not good enough can go really deep. And so in terms of your answering the question, what can you do? I think it depends on what you need and how deep these feelings are. So if you're experiencing a deep amount of shame really comes in from some sort of belief or trauma that happened before you were fully in your frontal lobe, before you were 4 years old.
Yeah.
And that kind of work, I think, works best if you do some sort of subconscious work with somebody who is skilled and you trust and you feel really good working with. So whether it's EMDR, hypnosis, EFT, emotional freedom technique, tapping, something like that. I do a number of techniques with my clients where we do inner child work or parts work or tapping. I have multiple tools that I use for people when it feels appropriate for us to go in there. And honestly, this is a place where I have seen people make huge shifts with their health when they're stuck. Sometimes it's because there's an old pattern that once that can be seen and shifted, then it frees up the body to begin to experience itself in a whole new way. And you get out of this trauma loop that impacts that whole limbic brain. I think the other thing that I think is really important is that we're always having a little chitter chatter narrative thing that's going on in our head. I mean, are you aware of yours, Aubrey?
Very much so. Very much so. You know? Yeah.
And what I've found interesting is the more I work on myself, the more I feel like layers of sediment from the deep, deep earth are kind of starting to come up. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even realize that this was a pattern that's been in my brain for decades. I didn't even realize that this was like, it's almost like it becomes a habit of recreating patterns from our childhood and sort of how we interpret ourselves to be in the world that come up. And I think there can be a place where we can consciously begin to recreate new ideas of who we are and what we want to be and start loving ourselves. I mean, the most simple answer to your question, truly, it sounds super simple, over simple, a little bit woo-woo, and like I'm all flowers, which actually I like flowers a lot, but it's love. I mean, if we can honestly learn how to really allow ourselves to experience full love for ourselves, like we do for our pets and our children and those things outside of us. If we can really understand how worthy we are of that love and let it in and feel it and receive it, they've literally tested how this shifts your physiology. This has been scientifically proven that we have this huge energy field around our heart, and in heart math they've scientifically measured this, and it can connect with the brain, and you can go into a coherence pattern. And when you're in the coherence pattern, when you're in this really healthy loop, then your whole physiology, your stress response goes into healing mode instead of reactivity mode, and you begin to normalize and you become much healthier in that state.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Scientific fact. You heard it right here. Scientific fact. This aura of sorts surrounding the heart, right? Yeah. When we connect with ourselves and discover love and understand that we are worthy and that, you know, we are adequate. It does that shift to healing mode. I find that fascinating. Yeah. And I can understand why, because of the change in the mindset, whereas someone who has, say, for lack of a better term, doom and gloom mindset, could be more damaging, I would suppose. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Very so it's really, And when you talk about that fifth health foundation of connection, we're such social beings that a lot of times it's easier for us to get out of our kind of self-reflective negative state when we are out with other people. And if we're doing things where, you know, if you go out dancing or you singing or something where you're out with people, you're communing in some way, you're eating, whatever it is that brings you joy, then it's easier to start feeling, wow, I feel so good. My heart feels so, you know, so full, and I get to give this person a hug and I mean it. And, and you can start to see, like, that's what we're talking about. That's that building that we're talking about. Right. And
No, it totally is. It totally is. I mean, that's the energy, that's the vibe. And, spreading it from person to person, I mean, it just exponentially grows throughout our space, right? Our environment.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
This is absolutely delightful conversation, Dr. Jenny. How can the listeners follow you, connect with you, and learn more about the great work that you're doing in these discoveries and helping people with these types of discoveries?
Yeah, the best thing is to go to my website, drjennytufankian.com. Okay. On there, you'll see a whole bunch of information that I share on there. There's a quiz. If you're interested in uncovering a root cause, you can check out the quiz. Mm-hmm. On there are my different social media handles. You can check those out as well. Mm-hmm. And I love hearing from you. You're certainly welcome to connect and reach out if you have questions. If you're interested in seeing if we're a good match to work together, there's a little application you can apply, and we can have a chat to see if it's a good fit.
Fantastic. Well, all those links to the social media handles, the web address, all of that, we will definitely put in the episode show notes so that our listeners can click the links, connect with you, learn more about your great work while listening to this wonderful conversation. Dr. Jenny Tufankian, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I really, really appreciate your insights. I hope we can stay in touch and maybe perhaps bring you back on the show sometime in the future if you'd be willing.
Thank you, Aubrey. I would be honored to do that. It's been an absolute joy to talk with you as well. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to thank all of you. And you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're not alone. And hope is always right around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs inspiration, motivation, and support. You know, we're all just roadies on this journey of life, but it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.